From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning. Welcome to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Seth Merrill and Steve Bick, good morning.
Good morning.
The swan song for you here live as you head to Louisville. When do you head there? Let people know for the radio show.
Friday, I guess, after the show is when I usually, you know, I make about halfway. I'll go 7-8 hours and then do the second half Saturday morning.
How long a drive is that?
14.
Yeah.
12 if you're, you know, 12 if you're a Leadfoot type, you know, that I haven't pressed it as much as I used to. So 14, I consider. Erie is about halfway, but then you like to go a little further into Ohio. Ashtabula. When you hit Ashtabula, you know you're now starting to, you know, to get close. And then there's the great tradition, which is breakfast at the Mentor, Ohio Waffle House. Coming and going.
Make sure they're open?
Waffle House?
Yeah.
It takes Armageddon to close Waffle House. The government has the Waffle House Index. You ever read about this?
No.
Oh, this is true. When there is severe weather, you know, particularly, you know.
What?
Oh, sure. Look it up. Look it up right now.
Keep going.
The Waffle House Index is how the emergency preparedness department judges the severity of storms. Absolutely. Hurricanes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
In particular. And if whatever percentage of Waffle Houses are closed in the region gives them an idea of how severe the storm is. Look it up at home, the Waffle House Index. And you'll read about it. Absolutely true.
Little did I know. But speaking of the Kentucky Derby, we should toss out the information that came out within the past, was it yesterday, the day before?
Friday.
No fans allowed.
Was it yesterday morning?
I'm not sure.
I'm losing track,
too. Me too. Originally, yeah, they were going to have fans in the infield, and then they cut that back to 23,000 over on the front side, and then, you know, kind of the other shoe dropped. Just, I think, given the situation that the Louisville area is in right now, 2 weeks out, they kind of had to pull the trigger there.
Well, there's a few things going on. In addition to, you know, what was already anticipated a couple of weeks ago, if you're following COVID progress closely, they basically, CDC had anticipated Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Tennessee with a bit of a spike. So that's working into this. There's also the matter of ongoing unrest, particularly in downtown Louisville, regarding Breonna Taylor. And there, frankly, there was real anticipation with Derby week coming that there was going to be, and there still could be, extensive protest and calls for justice for Breonna Taylor. It's a volatile situation, and apparently there's more information that may not sit well as that story goes forward. And so it's going to be an interesting Derby week overall, to say the least.
And you will be there live covering it. We'll plug in here over the next couple of
weeks.
Yeah,
we'll check in on Sundays, and Sunday before and the Sunday after.
Yeah, looking forward
to
it.
Which is
getting the boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground, baby. Parakeet in the cage. Nature, nurture. It's all there. We'll have it all.
You will have it all. No question about it. And speaking of Mr. Bick, I wanted to pull up right at the top of the show. Watch your horse run from yesterday, Kid Chocolate. Nice third yesterday.
He's
going to be the number two horse in here. Letterman gets it done for the red hot Jim Bond.
Jim Bond's out of control.
Italian runs second. But Kid Chocolate there in those nice green, lime green silks makes a great run to run third.
Except watch Tyler Gaffleone, who rode him last time. Look at Tyler pinning us inside. And it's not until after he clears that Manny Franco can get out and come with the late run the last 16th. Very clever race riding by Tyler Gaffleone. And, boy, I got to give him credit. I mean, Tyler liked him, but, you know, took the mount on the winner, and I can't blame him, but can't have any issue with two good thirds up here the last couple of weeks. And as I've said before, he's a horse that's had, he's got breathing issues, and he had a bad ridgeling situation. So you do want to win up here. But listen, we had two thirds and a fourth, Minute Mouse. She might run again, actually, at the end of the meet, the last weekend. So it's been fun. It's just nice. Partners came out. I want to thank the Cafrio brothers and Dave Brown, who came, and, of course, Gary and the whole team. And Manny Franco did not have a mount after the fifth, and yet he hung around for another 2 hours to ride. I really, really appreciate that. Yes. And thank Angel and Manny for sticking around to ride.
Nice. I want to jump into the stakes action from yesterday?
We can do it and talk about what else went on in the week. And, of course, Del Mar last night, with late into the evening, 9:30. That we'll get into. And
some of those. Before we talk stakes, just want to remind people the Empire Six Day with the mandatory 600,000. I mean, $3-4 million?
I would figure 600,000, figure about 4.5 times, at least, 3.5 probably.
I mean, there'll be a good chunk of change in there, and at the 20-cent increment, at least take a look at the sequence and see if you can put together a fairly reasonable ticket and jump in and have some fun with the mandatory pay. All right, let's go back to yesterday's four-star, Dave, and take a look at this one as it was. Halliday getting it done on the front end. I put Raging Bull on top. And I guess going back, I really wouldn't change things up necessarily. But given the way speed's been on the turf over the past week and a half or so, Halliday was expected to get out to the front. Todd Pletcher said just outside the winner's circle afterwards, that was clearly the game plan. And that's the way it played out with Luis Saez on board. Got to the front, took him all the way around, got Stormy, ran very well to kind of rebound from her last two poor performances, and got up to be second. Looked to maybe challenge a couple of times in the stretch. Halliday at number five, got Stormy to number four, and Lee Einsiedler's Casa Creed ran a nice third in here as well. But Halliday, again, on the front end, takes them all the way around.
Very much all the way around. And, you know, it's so weird when it comes to the turf. When it's baked hard, it plays into the hands of speed. When there's rain and the top of the surface has a give to it, it's hard for horses to quicken. So it's a double-edged sword. You need the turf to be, I guess, perfect, and you need honest pace. Halliday, you got to give him credit because he keeps winning races this way. He basically, Luis Saez does what he does best, which is nurse him around and then quicken. I thought Got Stormy very... happy to see Got Stormy run an A race again, and
funny. You think she might go by?
Watch what happens, because it's only in the latest stages that Tyler starts to really get after her. And I thought she give Halliday credit. He extends.
Tyler said that they interviewed Tyler after the race, who brought him over to be interviewed, and he said, I tried to move her out a little bit so that he wouldn't engage when I got next to him, and then when I got up there, he did kind of take off again.
Absolutely did. That is, and that's what Saez does so well. He preserves and holds a horse together up on the front end, gets them to relax, and then has got that burst when people come to him. You mentioned Casa Creed. Casa Creed was kind of throwing up clods and spinning the wheels a little bit early in this race. And it wasn't until Junior Alvarado thought to get him out. You know, both turf courses have a crown. You've got, the turf course goes like this. And so the more you get out into the third path, fourth path, the less wet, the less moisture there is on the crown. And so horses then get some better footing. And that's what looked to have happened with Casa Creed there. And for everybody around the game, Lee finished third as well in the maiden race. Probably should have gotten put up to second. And today he's got a very likely winner in No Salt to start that pick six. And the entire racing community had their hearts for Lee after a family tragedy that... is tough to accept and tough to understand, and we all collectively are thinking about Lee and his wife Danielle and their son Jeffrey and their son Aaron and his wife. It's been a very difficult situation the last 10, 12 days, and Lee needs to know that all of us are thinking about him.
Yeah, I mean, one of the good guys in racing. I've known him, but I think I met him through you. I'm sure I met him through you, but I've known him now a few years and see him over on the front side. He had that crazy win early in the meet. I don't think we ever talked about that on the show, where he put together the $8
We did.
Pick six ticket.
Sure we did. We talked,
but just kept hitting repeat. Yeah, so he had like $200 worth. Yeah. He collected $500,000.
Over $500,000.
On basically an $8 ticket. He'd singled four horses, I think, and had a couple of crazy horses.
Yep.
But he's a fun guy to talk to on that level. You know, now a prominent owner in the game, but he's just a regular guy to talk to and have fun with over on the front side. So, yeah, everybody sends condolences to Lee. And as you say, our thoughts go out to the whole family. All right, so we shift to last night, late Pacific Classic, and work back through some of those Del Mar Stakes because it was maximum security in the Pacific Classic. We'll watch the entire race here, the mile and a quarter. Maximum security gets pressed early. Maximum security, the number five horse. Sharp Samurai, the number six, really is right there with them all the way around, and I'll tip my cap again to Ellis Starr. I had him on Friday, and we were kind of looking at the races, and he took a little pop with Sharp Samurai, and that one holds on to run second after chasing maximum security all the way around. Midcourt runs third. Higher Power runs fourth in here. Maximum security got it done at 2-5. I wanted to see what he would do here after the race last time. I'm not sure I'm any more impressed. I mean, I think you and some other people were impressed last time with the guts and the grit.
Yeah, you got
I can't knock that. And I'm not really knocking this one. I'm just not sure that he now raises to, you know, jump out in this division in any way. But it's nice to see him at least put a grade one on the resume after what happened earlier, I think helps validate how talented he is. So I was kind of happy to see that.
Some weird things happened in here, including the fact that Midcourt never really chooses, at least early. You know, basically, they get away with nearly a 24-second opening quarter. It is, you know, it is a mile and a quarter. This is a horse that is supposed to, you know, be challenged early and often, and I thought he was. There's people that just love to hate on this horse. I thought that this second half of the race, when Higher Power did range up, or Midcourt range, was that mid? Yeah, that was Midcourt. Higher Power seems to be finished. He was a huge disappointment in here. But when Midcourt ranged up and Sharp Samurai responded, and so for that 3/8 there, you had, you know, the middle portion of the race, he was forced to run and run hard. And then he dismisses Sharp Samurai and wins off. And I thought this was a quality performance. There's a lot of people that, you know, want to just be dismissive of everything this horse does. And I don't really understand it. I thought this was very solid. What did he go? 23-4. 24 flat.
I didn't see, was there a buyer out yet?
Not yet. You would think it's going to be a low mid, you know, 103, 104 type of a figure. 23-4, 24 flat. 24 and 3. 24-1. And 24-4. A horse runs 5, 23, 24 second quarters. That's racehorse time. He went in 201-1 on a track that has been described all summer as deep and tiring and heavy and dull. I understand. It wasn't a field like he's going to face ideally in the Classic. Let's see if he comes to the Jockey Club Gold Cup or they stay home for the Awesome again at Santa Anita. But I'd
love to see him in New York just to see Luis Saez get back on him. Castillo gave an improved ride yesterday as compared to the San Diego, obviously.
Well, I didn't think Cedillo did anything wrong in the San Diego.
Well, on the back stretch where he kind of he took him back a little bit, I think had to take him back a little bit and then kind of moved out. I think the horse lost a little momentum there, certainly.
I can't argue. But the horse also, you know, ends up demonstrating, you know, in gut check time, you know, getting up to win. I don't know. I find I find the disdain for this horse because of Jason Service's association with him and everything that happened in the Derby. It just seems unfair to be piling on this horse and critiquing this horse more acutely than you would any other horse. He's just a horse, and he goes and he goes out, he trains, he races, and has got a resume that is,
and again,
puts
another great one on in the new barn. I think he validates the gutsiness we've seen earlier in the career through the last two, so that's nice to see.
It's a good effort at 10 furlongs, the classic trip, and it's a good performance. And hopefully we get to see him twice more. You know, there's a school of not thought, but a suggestion out there that, oh, he'll end up, something will go wrong now and he'll disappear. I thought it was a very credible effort. I thought you got what you wanted to see. If you want to question others, why don't you question Midcourt and Higher Power? I mean, Sharp Samurai is ostensibly a turf horse. Mark Glatt has been wanting to try him in this situation on the dirt for a while, and he was ready to run. He ran hard. He enhanced his resume.
Absolutely.
Mark Glatt does a tremendous job. He's a fabulous trainer. You know who disappointed me was Dark Vader, who I thought would benefit from the mile and a quarter, and I knew it was going to be a big price, and I tried to key him second, and I got nothing out of that. But ask why Midcourt wasn't pressing early, and if Higher Power can even run anymore, they did not seem to want to, you know, run in this race to try to win.
Yeah. Maximum Security now comes out of it, a couple of wins in the new barn, and so we'll see what's up next. I would love to see him come here and get Luis Saez jump back on board and see what that produces here in New York, but we'll see where they go next. Another grade one on the card yesterday, Del Mar Oaks, upset in there. Laura's Light, who coming off the two-race win streak prior, including the San Clemente, was the 3-2 favorite. She'll be the number 10 horse as we pick it up. But, gets swallowed up in the stretch. Winds up a disappointing sixth. Red Lark, the number 7 horse, 19-1 over number 2. California Kook at 27-1. 7-2, Warren's Showtime finishes third. So the old 7-2 exacta for a buck, $363.
Now, this is a nice performance, and always happy when Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, Patty Gallagher, it's great that Aaron Wellman sends horses and has from day one to Gallagher, and Patty gets a huge win. And I'm so looking forward to talking to him on the radio tomorrow. This is an Irish import that I thought was terrific. I was trying to get the other one of the other imports in, that Neige Blanc, Snow White. I was trying to get her in the number. Pratt had her a little too far back. She got the last minor award. I thought Laura's Light ran okay, but you did want to kind of be against her in this spot. And 3-2, I thought was a very aggressive price. Gwithy, I thought would be potentially a player in here. Warren Showtime, who I liked in the San Clemente, she ran very well, and good third in here for Craig Lewis. This was another nice part of what was a terrific card yesterday, which started, we're not going to have the performance, but Princess Noor, the $1.3 million Zidane filly for Baffert, opened the card with exactly the kind of performance they were looking for from her. So when you get a chance, watch the look at you. Who's better than this staff? It's unbelievable. Holy cow.
Bang, there it is.
You want it? You got it. Look at her cantering under the wire. That's actually Baffert running second as well with a Stone Street homebred. Nice Stone Street home. Look at that filly. Oish. Princess Noor.
Final time.
Final time of 104 flat.
Yeah. So very good there. And finally, stakes action last night at Del Mar. Del Mar this, handicap.
This is a thing. That, this is a thing of beauty.
And again,
watch this.
Another upset. Well, I say upset, 4-1, but beats United, the 70 cents to the dollar favorite. Red King over United. Originaire runs third in here. And again, we're looking at Red King, the number 7 horse.
Well, unfortunately, you're not. I don't know if you can roll this back to back to the backstretch. Umberto Rispoli. Are you kidding me? Watch this race when you get a chance. Umberto Rispoli, I'm not saying anything about Flavian Pratt, any negative about Pratt, but I got to tell you, this Umberto Rispoli, that he has elevated himself to elite status, certainly out there.
Yeah.
And when he gets a chance, when the borders drop in these jocks rooms, this kid is tremendous. And, you know, Ron Anderson had his book to start his North American career. And he had to give the kid up when John Velasquez, when Johnny called Anderson to take his book, when Johnny and Angel Cordero split up. But Ron Anderson dropped Rispoli with real trepidation. And I think Scotty McClellan, one of the great agents on the West Coast, one of the great agents anywhere, got his book. This ride is spectacular. He makes what looks to be potentially a premature move, but he judges what he's got in Red King, an English Channel 6-year-old. This is a mammoth win. And Phil D'Amato, by the way, has won this, what, 4 of the last 5 years? Phil D'Amato has won this race, I believe, 4 times in 5 years. And this gets Red King a free pass for the Little Red Feather team, gets him right
That's
into the
Breeders'
Cup.
That's actually a pretty good accomplishment for a trainer, because how many horses do you have in your barn that go a mile and 3/8 successfully?
Anyway? Exactly. That's exactly right. This, I'm telling you, get the whole replay. If you want to see,
didn't he come down from Northern California, Rispoli?
Briefly,
because he came on the scene, and it's been maybe a year now or part of a year where he's been notable out there, and I kind of looked up, and I think he had come down from Northern California and then kind of immediately made his mark on the move south.
Serious kid, and also should mention the 3-year-old fillies in the Torrey Pines, because Harvest Moon. For Simon Callahan and Mrs. Bamford and Coolmore. Very nice. An Alice Bamford homebred, an Uncle Mo filly. Watch the Torrey Pines as well. That was a nice performance. The 3-year-old fillies are coming out of the woodwork. It's so funny because last year as 2-year-olds, they stunk. As a collective bunch, they were awful. And as they've matured, the 3-year-old fillies really have come to play. And of course, you know, Swiss Skydiver and Gamine, and we're going to have a speech, you know, et cetera. So pretty cool.
I just wanted to quickly show a couple of more races from up here from the past week, because I think they had nice performances or nice storylines. The Bolton Landing from earlier in the week, the 2-year-olds on the grass. This Toby's Heart was just phenomenal. It was phenomenal in the career debut down at Churchill with an 86 buyer winning off by about 7 lengths. And look great, the number 6 horse here in the Bolton Landing on, I think it was Wednesday or maybe Thursday, but gets it done here to go 2-for-2 for Brian Lynch. Jose Ortiz on board. And again, this is just another nice performance from what is clearly a very, very nice turf sprinting 2-year-old filly.
No doubt. And in fact, both of the 2-year-old performances on the week were terrific, because we're going to also see the Skidmore. I added the Skidmore, Seth, because Golden Pal, that was Friday, that was a tremendous performance.
Yeah.
Scary good. So, yeah, here, watch this. Watch the, I mean, 2-5, okay. But watch.
Coming in from the really nice performance over at Royal Ascot. So the betting public was all over it. Fauci, who I think is going to turn out to be nice.
He's nice.
Well beaten.
He's nice.
Second in here.
But no contest. Here, look at this. Oosh.
For WW.
92 buyer.
Oh, yeah. And again, he had run so well at Royal Ascot that you had to kind of jump on him here in that performance. And finally, wanted to just show the stretch drive of the the New York Turf Writers.
Absolutely.
The great one for the jumpers, because it was a great storyline with Leslie Young running 1-2 with Rashan, the number one horse, and Redesian, the number three horse. She gets the exacta finish in here. Optimus Prime is the 8-5 favorite. Disappoints a little bit running fifth. And this race, because of the season being a little bit condensed, might wind up being the last grade one.
Not,
I talked to Tom Law.
It is. It's not just the last grade one. It's the last stake.
Yeah. And so talking to Tom Law this week, we were saying maybe eclipse implications. I don't know whether this helps the eclipse voters, but again, a nice run for Leslie Young.
No doubt. And happy to see Leslie and Patty in the winner's circle. Regarding the situation, Bill Gallo was with us midweek, too, previewing this and also previewing Snap Decisions. How about Snap? You want to talk about performance?
With 165.
165 pounds. I believe that Joe Clancy came up with the tidbit. There had not been a horse win at Saratoga over 160 pounds since 1979. Just to give you an idea, this is a mammoth accomplishment. Snap Decision basically could have run in the Turf Riders, stayed in the novice division, and won the Wednesday stake, the Walsh Novice, under an incredible impost. Okay. And Snap Decision is on an absolute skein. I mean, I think that's five straight. But in the meantime, and I tell you what, I mean, I don't think he gets... He'll get votes for the Eclipse, Snap Decision. I think you got to respect
Moscato probably
it.
With the Temple
Guatney. Moscato's got, the two wins.
Probably, yeah.
So Moscato probably. But Moscato disappointed here on Thursday. Really did. So I don't know. But unfortunately, no Lonesome Glory downstate. No Far Hills, which is a tragedy. It was, in terms of an anniversary, was going to be the 100th Far Hills meeting. The year-end championship.
And for folks who wonder, once you get past, you know, Belmont or Saratoga or some of the established racetracks, they're these hunt meet kind of things, which are all based on tailgating and a big crowd, and you just can't do it in this situation.
No. Well, and it might have been in a different venue, but in New Jersey right now, because of the quantity of gatherings, it just isn't practical for Guy Torsolieri and the jump set to try to do it. I mean, it's too much of a... I mean, every single parking space where there's a car has a gathering bigger than they're allowing in New Jersey, so right now. So it's too bad. But one more jump race, two more. One this week and one next week.
Yeah. And so
Wednesday
have
and
a
Wednesday.
More to look forward to up here. All right, we'll wrap up this segment when we come back. Hey, it's our annual visit. They're not here, but we'll Zoom them in. Paul and Duke Matisse, always like to have them on, see if we can get maybe some winners for this afternoon. Keep that streak going. We'll talk to Paul and Duke right after this. Stay tuned.
The New York hero, Tiz the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
When New York bred Tiz the Law won the 2020 Belmont Stakes, OTB TV was live with owner Jack Knowlton to capture all the excitement.
And certainly seeing what he did today, we think a mile and a quarter is well within his range, and hopefully he can prove it at Saratoga Racecourse.
For exclusive interviews and racing information, stay with Capital OTB and OTB TV and win more.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play. With easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport, it's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement. From world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
I got it. Watch me. I got it. Hey! I got something that makes me want to shout. I got something that tells me what it's all about. I got a move that tells me what to do. If you don't, brothers and sisters, then you won't know what it's all about.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning, and it's an annual visit, but it has to be done the way a lot of these kinds of visits are being done. It's through the magic of technology, through Zoom. The brothers Matisse, it's been an unusual summer for them, not back in the corner by the Red Spring at their picnic tables around the TV sets, but enjoying Saratoga nonetheless. And in fact, the whole family enjoying a win with Firster stimulus check this week sent out by brother Greg and Duke and Paul Matisse. Join us. Guys, congratulations. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you to us, Seth.
Thank you, guys.
Look at this. Look at that. The whole this Hollywood Squares. Right. Duke, you're Paul Lynn.
let's take a look at this stretch run from stimulus check and just talk a little bit about this one. By Tapicher, again, first-time starter, 12-1 on the morning line, but took a little action, went off at 5-1, but looks pretty good. Chart margin here, just under five lengths, the number one horse. Talk about how you acquired the horse and what you thought of the performance on August 19th.
It's a homebred.
Well, we bred her. We own the mare. She's had two foals before this, and both of them had won in New York. But the last one was pretty good, Cat Lady stuff. She won first time, too, but that was on the turf. But this horse had always worked in the dirt. So this was kind of our goal all along, to try to, you know, to have a homebred break your maiden at Saratoga is probably, you know, that's a big goal of all breeders, definitely us. We, like I said, we were all hoped that we'd been there. We'd probably be still partying out there in the back if in there, but you know, it was great. It was great to watch her win, and you know, as a 2-year-old, you start to think big after a race like that. You know,
you mentioned the mare, Just Leave Me Alone, and in fact, bred by the late Jerry Dilger, and you must have claimed her fairly late in her career.
Yeah, we claimed her with the idea that we would breed her when she was done running.
How about
that? She won once or twice for us. I think she only won once, and she got beat a couple noses a couple other times. But, you know, she's by Spitestown. She had a lot of heart, that mare. She was not the soundest horse, but kind of like racing things, ankles and such. So it kind of all went the plan that we would breed her. You never know on those things, but I'll tell you, this filly, stimulus check, she looked good right from the time she was born. I even posted pictures of her on Twitter a couple of years ago, so that's how much I liked her right from the start. So,
where was she raised?
She, at Saratoga Glen, out towards Schuylerville.
Nice.
So she's a Saratoga born.
Well, the timing was perfect, and you know, for Greg, it's a great, you know, it's a great win for him. How was how'd the stimulus check idea come as a name? The name got a lot of positive recognition.
Well, we have a friend of ours that for every day that his check wouldn't come, he would say, "Where my stimulus at?" So. That kind of like started my idea of naming something with stimulus, you know, something with the stimulus in it. And then I kind of like the idea that this filly is going to be our stimulus check. You know, she's going to give us a check every, hopefully every about 5 or 6 weeks.
Exactly. I didn't look up what kind of figure did she come back with?
It was a very hard day to do because that was the day it rained right before the. Right before the races, so I'm not sure what you got for a buyout or anything, but that day is going to be tricky anyway. And you know, sometimes things work out. She got a really good trip. The pace was fast in front of her. So, but we deserve one of those every once in a while too.
Yeah, I mean, she looked great. Obviously, visually very impressive. And as I say, took a little action at the windows. I'm sure you guys helped that. Paul, I'd gone to your Twitter feed last night, and I was scrolling down, and it was kind of interesting. You put up a win photo from 30 years ago, the horse Win-A-Mint, your first winner. And it was amazing in the tweet you said over the years as Matisse Racing has gone along, 600 winners, but more importantly, 45 different racetracks you've won at.
Yeah, we moved around quite a bit. Plus, you know, Duke on the West Coast, he's racked up a bunch of tracks out there. We even have a win at Rialto Park and Ferndale, Stockton, Pleasanton. So I guess it's a little bit padded. we racked up those fair wins, but it was, you know, we've been all around. I'm pretty proud of that we've been able to win everywhere. So it's not just one little niche that we've tapped into.
Well, the first one was at Marshfield. So there you go.
Marshfield Fair.
Yep.
Well, somebody asked something, and I responded. I said, forget about asking him about winning at the fair. I said, talk to them about betting at the fair and going over to over to Great Barrington, and the stories are legion. Let's get Duke in here too. Duke, talk a little bit about those days.
I miss when Paul put that picture on our, we have a message board that we all kind of connect into every day. And he put that picture up and I said, oh, I miss those days. It was so much fun going to the Marshfield Fair and Great Barrington Fair as a kid growing up and, you know, watching a race, then going into the fair, play games, get some food, go back, make sure you get back to bet before the next race goes. You know, we were moving around. I used to even look for tickets back in those days. I just thought that in a fair atmosphere, I thought that when there was a light scratch or when there was something going on, I could make a few extra dollars just by picking up tickets. And one day I really scored out because the first race at Marshfield, I knew there was going to be a disqualification because the horse that won cut off another horse. So I started looking for those little daily double tickets. They were those little tiny little tiny daily double tickets that were colorful, I think. And I was looking for just for sevens because I thought the seven who ran second was going to get put up. Sure enough, I found a couple $20 doubles alive to two different horses, and I got the winner at the second and made $2,000 as like a 13-year-old kid. So Marshfield was great all around. I mean, just loved it. Loved the atmosphere of the fair racing.
$2,000 stooping at Marshfield. Who would have thought?
That's tremendous. Tremendous. Well, Marshfield, Brockton, Northampton, Great Barrington, and then places like Green Mountain and Berkshire Downs. I mean, it was an amazing. I was a kid. I mean, I'm 60 now, and I unfortunately my father, you know, wouldn't you know, it wasn't his kind of thing. But I love listening to Chick and Duke and Paul talk about the fair experience. And Duke, you talk about a DQ. Paul, let's get some current topics into circulation about where things are right now in the game. And it was a very volatile week. We've got the timing issue involving the G-Max equipment that Equibase is foisting on the industry. Then you've had a series of DQs, including the one yesterday at Monmouth that was disgraceful. Paul, you've been pretty vocal about, you know, making some sort of plan or some sort of action to alleviate these controversies and these frustrations.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't a good week on inquiries. The one at Del Mar was probably equally as bad. We definitely need a new rule. You know, I was supposed to go to the first year I went to the RCI convention there right after I won the NHC, and I wasn't sure how that whole thing was going to go, and I spoke at it, and it went well, but I kind of missed my opportunity, so I decided I was going to go back this spring. And unfortunately, it was canceled. So we were kind of making a little headway in that area. So, you know, hopefully when everything is back to normal, we can continue on doing something like that. But I really like this concept of an American Category 1 where there's a series of rules. I think American racing is very unique. So to use the international Category 1 just blindly or plainly is probably, it's better than what it is now, but it's not all the way. And I think if we did an American category one with some rules to help these things, that stop these things from happening like they've been the last week or so particularly, you know, there's been a push to say that there should be no inquiries. And if you'd, about 2 weeks ago, there was an inquiry at Gulfstream, maybe a week and a half, where it was proof of where, why you need inquiries. A horse had the lead, and he came out like 15 past and right in front of another horse and clipped heels. It's kind of why the inquiry started. So, you know, I understand when people say that, but the truth of the matter is we need them, because you can't have things happen like that race at Gulfstream. So we've seen kind of the examples of why we need them, why we need change. And just with, I don't think it's that complicated. I think just some simple rules. I've actually been tweeting some of the ideas. Craig Mikowski had a time for him. He had a great idea about the one at Del Mar, which would have corrected that one, I think. And I think something simple about the jockey's actions, if they're, you know, attempt of, you know, what Paco Lopez did yesterday, you know, one or two sentences, we can correct all this. So hopefully, I think maybe when things get back to normal, we're gonna get this done eventually.
The one we were showing was at Monmouth yesterday in the Island, and Jorge Vargas is basically tightening things up on Paco Lopez, who is as aggressive a rider as there is in the game, a guy that is constantly, flagrantly putting guys in harm's way. And to take Vargas and Grant Foster down in this spot in the red was unconscionable. It's really hard to, and I don't get worked up about these. I think they're going to even out overall. But look at his elbow. Look at Paco with the elbow and with the grandstanding up in the irons. When really he had plenty of room. And if you watch the pan, you'll see that he wasn't winning. The Pirates. I'm going to forget the last name. Pirates Punch. A Pirates Punch was winning that race. And this is where, Paul, you're referencing, and Duke, I want you to sound off, because you are as harsh a critic of jockey shenanigans as anybody. The idea is that you don't take a winner down that was clearly best, and in some cases you don't take them down at all, but you then penalize the jock in days and in fines. And that's the concept of the international rules, as opposed to either a foul is a foul, or a foul that costs a horse a placing means a disqualification. And you know, to me, the, you know, letting it go no matter what, I don't think that's too practical, because there's got to be circumstances, there's going to be races worth a tremendous amount of money and prestige where guys are going to go hell-bent to win. And they'll worry about the ramifications later. So there is, Paul, as you're suggesting, there's got to be some sort of either a rule adjustment or a widespread understanding.
You need rules, but obviously, like you say, the foul is a foul is outdated.
Yes,
you know, we need a better system. The other thing is, you can't be mad at Paco. He tried. He was going to lose. He actually won the race. He won for my friend Marshall. You can't be mad at him for what he did. Just the stewards have to be better to know what he was doing, you know, and have a rule that they can use so that to convey to the public of what happened. Because I think what would happen if they didn't take him down, you would have had some people on the other side, look, he almost went down. But if they were transparent and announced after the race, it was in the best interest of the stewards that they thought that Paco Lopez used the jockey acting rule, and all the results stay the same. You can't argue it. There's a rule, and the transparency is there, and it's 2020. There's no reason why it shouldn't be done. You know, they could have Zoom conferences with the stewards after every race.
Yep.
We should see them up there talking about why they made the decision.
Agreed.
Why they what they thought about this one. Who didn't vote for it, like the one in Del Mar. You know, this idea that it's a majority decision. Let's put all three of them out there. Let's see if they had to talk about it after, they would make sure they got it right. They wouldn't want to look like a fool. So there's things that can be done. It's not that hard. I think eventually we'll get there. You know, that's my thought. Duke will probably be a lot tougher, but that's my diplomatic answers.
Duke.
Kind of losing you guys here.
There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you good.
Oh, okay. I actually wrote an email to the Del Mar management about the one at Del Mar because I was just appalled. I thought they took down the wrong horse. The horse that was in front, it was the first race on Friday, the horse that was in front, he may have drifted in maybe a quarter of the path. He's in front by a length and he drifts in a quarter of a path, and Brice Blanc is on the two horse and he's diving through a hole that's not there, chops off Pratt, and then they take down the horse that was in front. How do you take down the horse that's in front? He doesn't know what's happening behind him. He's on a 1,000-pound animal. He drifts over a quarter of a path, and then he went out of his way to hit left-handed to straighten the horse right out, and he did. The horse straightened right up, and they take him down. It just made no sense. So I wrote a letter to men, said you guys got to get these things right. You can't have bettors get frustrated with the with decisions made by stewards. That's for sure. Because I didn't even bet the race, but it aggravated the hell out of me just to watch and see what they did.
Interesting. I it's funny. I was with John DeSantis watching the races, and Johnny called it the way the stewards ended up doing it. He said to take the one down and place him behind who was it, the third place finisher. But I mean, there's one of these every day. It's gotten to the point where it feels like there's one of these on a daily basis.
Saratoga's had plenty of them that,
yeah,
have been very, very questionable. I mean, one day they took down, it was a stake race, I think, they took down Paul that day. They put the horse behind the horse he fouled, which they said he fouled, who finished like fourth or fifth. But
yes,
then the very next one, when they took it down, they didn't put the horse behind the horse that,
yeah,
that finished fourth or fifth that got interfered with.
Yep.
They can't have it both ways. You can't do it one way and then the next time do it a different way. You got to do it the same every time. It's getting tiresome to watch, and you have no confidence in what the numbers are going to be after the race goes up. And the jockeys in New York have kind of been disgusting this season, in my opinion. I mean, I'm hard on them, but they've been hurting left and right. I mean, Jose Ortiz hurted as I've seen. I mean, I take trips on every race every day. I've seen him hurt at least 25 times this meet. He's just moving guys all over the goddamn track. It's just ridiculous. They got to be better. The jockeys got to be better. I mean, I know it's tough. I know it's tough to keep these horses straight, but they got to do a better job of keeping the races safe, and they got to do a better job of separating, because they go so damn slow that the horses are in tight quarters constantly in these turf races, and that's what's causing all these inquiries, because they go so slow and they're all full of run and they need to get out, and when they try to get out, they herd their way out or they herd their way in, and it's causing all kinds of problems.
Seth years ago had a suggestion that was way ahead of its time, and you know where I'm headed, Seth. You had the eye in the sky concept. Seth called for sort of a national stewards board, essentially, that's watching all the racing nationally, and whether they were appointees. I mean, basically, and then the NFL ended up doing it. But you suggested this 15 years ago, that there should be, take it out of the hands of the regional jurisdictions, and where there's potential conflicts of interest, like we've seen for years, and have a board of professional, full-time stewards that are watching this. No more talking to jocks on the phone, because that's pointless. What's your thoughts on this, both of you?
I love the idea. I think it's a great idea. I every time somebody brings something up like that, I say the same thing. I think they should have, five or seven guys, an odd number, obviously, in a room that are removed from the track, that have no relation to Bob Baffert, don't know him, you know what I mean? He seems like he gets the
you know, he gets every call in his favor. I mean, when it comes to California, and you just don't want bias when it comes to these decisions. You want people that it's just, you need like a jury. See, it's gotta be like that.
Paul.
You know, like I said, when I went to the conference there, I was taken by, you know, they want to get it right. You know, the stewards and the accreditation process, they want to get it right. Just like everything in racing, you know, there's no national body, so it makes anything like that hard. I think it would be great if we could get it done. You know, I'm a little leery that it can happen because of the fact that we have these different states and we don't have any national organizations. But it would have to be a joint venture by all the, you know, by all the tracks and probably with the Jockey Club. And so for the TRA, and you know, I would love it if they could do it. I think it's better. You know, the one thing that I did want to say is, you know, the difference between racing and say like the NFL is that, you know, they change one play, you know, or they change one call, you know, in a racetrack, you change the whole result.
That's a good point.
And, yep. I think that has to be, you know, that's how important it is. And I don't think everybody kind of sees it that way. So, all right, enough about inquiries.
All right.
I have a question, though, that I've asked a lot of people over the past couple of months. And for folks who aren't familiar, Paul and Duke Batiste are two of the biggest horse players in the country, two of the most prominent, and they wind up in Vegas every year at the National Handicapping Championship. But obviously, you were amongst all of the racing fans who went through the quarantine period where we had essentially the five tracks that were running. I got to know, did you guys play a little Fawner?
Oh. Of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Every day.
I actually loved Fawner. That was the most fun of that.
Fawner was fabulous. I loved it.
The two turn six furlong races.
Well,
I think
I reached out. I had Paul come on the show and try to educate people because there was a huge DQ.
Most of my time during that was Bonner, and I actually started playing quarter horses at Remington.
Nice.
Remington quarter horses was huge for me.
Well, and Paul, you talked about this. Because I reached out for you guys because the public sees so little bullring racing that they didn't understand. I think the majority of players didn't really understand what was going on in those turns and why there was so much hurly-burly going on because of the you know, it's not like a full-size racetrack. And I think once people, you know, sort of got an understanding and you helped provide that, I think they started to really enjoy it. Not to mention the fact that they run like greyhounds and harness horses. They run every 7 days. It was so much fun, you know, over the course of 2 months to see a horse run seven times.
You know what the worst thing about Fawner was? That I had all these trips on Fawner horses. So I had to start playing these tracks all over the country. I couldn't let them go. I had to watch Arapahoe. I had trips to Arapahoe and
Fair Meadows.
I had some bet backs at Wyoming. I couldn't get down on those, but I had horses all over the place.
I love it. It's so great. I got to ask too. Another controversial week. It was not a good week in racing for a number of reasons. And obviously, you know, Duke, you're following and doing the trips at Del Mar. Paul, when it comes to the figures, let's talk about what's going on with this G-Max and how you're adjusting. I had Andy Beyer on Wednesday. I had Pat Cummings on Thursday. Randy Moss, his head is going to explode. He is so angry about this. If you're following his threads on Twitter, talk a little bit about the situation with the GPS timing and the havoc that it's causing and how you're dealing with it.
Well, I had my first encounter with it yesterday in the pick six there at Del Mar on the mandatory payout. I knew those times and on those three-year-old fillies that ran the Del Mar Oaks. You guys probably went over that race earlier. That Laura's Light race came back, you know, exceptionally fast. And the race where the horses ran 1-2 out of was very slow. And I got fooled by it. I I had my doubts about both of them, and I still didn't listen, you know, I didn't listen to my inner self, so I kind of blew that pick six. So that was the first time that it's really cost me. I was really upset about it, as far as on the wagering side. You know, there's two things about it that I wanted to say. Is that, A, I'm not totally anti the idea of the GMAX and that sort of thing because of all the other things that it does. There's some really great data, and you know, I really am interested in the strides, what they're doing, and they can do strides for every 16th of a mile for horses, and they're in the charts on Equibase now. And I think if we, you could actually do figures off of strides and measure by strides instead of time. But the problem is that we haven't. We've been, you know, for 150 years, we've been doing it off of time. You know, for the last 50 years or so, you know, there's a history of figures and time, and we have track records and that sort of thing. So the thing that's really disappointing is that Equibase wouldn't be more transparent about that they were going to do it and how important these times are, and the fact that, you know, GPS timing can't be that accurate. And to just flimsily say, well, it doesn't matter, you know, I'm very disappointed in them for having that kind of attitude. And again, you know, it gets back to this transparency thing. You know, they should have announced this ahead of time that they were changing. I didn't even know it. I'm doing speed figures. I bet more tracks and watch more races than anybody. There's no way that when they first started doing it and at some of these tracks, I'm looking at these times like, this can't be right. And I had no idea what was even happening, you know, and that's terrible. This should have been announced continuously in the racing media. They should have been on your show in the morning.
They were
talking about, well, we're going to have some issues. It's going to be some growing pain. Yeah. This is what we're going to do. And I don't understand why racing thinks they can shove things under the rug. Like nobody's going to, you know, like we're all dummies and nobody's going to figure it out. And if we do it this way, it's just going to go away and people are going to keep betting. The heads of racing have to stop with that idea. You know, the horse players are the smart. I say this all the time. Horse players are the smartest people in the world. You know, you're not going to pull the wool over their eyes. So stop trying. You know, the racing people are listening, stop trying. Get out in front of these things and talk about them ahead of time, and it, you know, we'll work with it.
Duke, how have you dealt with the timing out there and on the bet backs? I mean, there's a lot of horses running back already, second half of the meet. What have you done?
Belmar's been tough so far, and I probably... Now that this has come out, it probably has a lot to do with the timer. I've struggled with it. I think I've had horses that were, you know, that I thought were going to run better than they were, and maybe the you know, figure was too high on them, because I've noticed, especially yesterday, like Paul was saying, that one race, that race fooled me, because I did a podcast on the whole late pick five on Friday for Pacific Classic Day, and I had almost every race dead on except that three-year-old filly race. That race fooled me. And I even said on the podcast that I would spread in that race because I wasn't confident in any of those fillies winning in that race. Mm. But Delmar's been, it's been pretty tough. I mean, it's a lot of work, number one, because I'm trying to do Saratoga and Delmar and Gulfstream all at the same time. And Delmar, you know, they only run 3 days a week instead of, you know, four and five with the other tracks. So I'm not... you know, I wish I was doing a little more work on the times. I just don't have the time to go time races, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I have done a little bit of stuff like that in the past, because I do think the timer's been really bad at Del Mar for years. But it's weird that they would want to, you know, change this thing, you know, during a Del Mar meet. Because they don't have any way to test it. So it's kind of foolish on their part to do it now, but I guess I don't know when the right time is.
Well, they're promising that they will fix it and make adjustments so that for the November meet, the Bing Crosby season, it'll be taken care of. I don't know what it does for Canterbury and for Laurel and for the other places that are suffering with this. I'm telling you, if you have not read through Randy Moss's Randy Moss has been, and you don't think of Randy as an angry, aggressive type, but he is as hot about this as anything I've ever seen. And, I mean, Andy Beyer was going to come on Wednesday, and I thought Andy would be a little bit more vocal. He was rather measured in his critique. I mean, the biggest problem to me is that here's the Jockey Club last Saturday. They're going to lecture the industry about integrity, and yet they were able to foist this for a year and a half. You want to talk about no integrity and transparency? Here they are putting this over on horse players for 18 months before there's any real recognition in widespread acknowledgement. I want to go back to Duke. Let's shift and talk about some racing. And Duke, last night, we were going back and forth about Maximum Security's performance, and you think he's a huge bet against when we come back for whatever, the Jockey Club Gold Cup, the Breeders' Cup, or the Awesome Again. Talk about what you think is Fugazi about Maximum Security.
I think both of his races, he hasn't really proven that he's the same horse since Saudi Arabia. I think he really struggled in his first race back, and you know, I think he was going to get beat there if they went further. And then yesterday, I mean, for some unknown reason, you know, the Victor Espinosa takes a hold of the one, you know, right off the bat. And, I mean, Maximum Security gets a 48 half on a track where they probably should have gone 46 and chain, maybe 47. So, I mean, and not only that, he didn't beat very much yesterday besides, you know, if the one doesn't show up and the, you know, the other horse of Sadler, seems like he's on his way out. I mean, the horse that ran second is just an average turf horse. I mean, Sharp Samurai, is that
his
name?
Sharp Samurai.
I just don't think he's beat anything, and I'm not sure he's running to the level he was running for service as he is for Baffert. And going against big guns in a bigger field, he's not going to get an easy lead like that, I can tell you that. He's not like that fast. So it's a definite bet against for me if he comes into the right spot where I can, you know, capitalize on it.
Paul, what's your take?
Paul there.
Did we lose Paul?
I can't see him anymore.
No.
Nope, he froze up.
You got, okay, Paul's.
There we go.
There we go. Okay, you're back. Paul's back, I think. Paul.
Yeah, I lost you for a second. You know, the thing about Maximum Security is, you know, I've been fooled by him before on these slow paces. The thing about the race yesterday was that it just didn't mean anything, you know. I mean, he ran okay. It's not a knock on him. But you got to remember, you know, there's two different things. Racing is a sport, and it's a, you know, and it's a, you know, gambling and sport aspects of it. As a gambler's perspective, you know, which Duke has even more than anybody that I know, you know, the idea is you bet against Maximum Security. As a sporting, you can have different opinions about Maximum Security. He's a very game horse. I don't think this hurts his, it obviously doesn't hurt his reputation on this race. It wasn't like he was life and death to win and that sort of thing. But it's just one of those things where this race doesn't prove he's back. This race doesn't prove that he's going to beat Tis the Law or Art Collector or even Improbable or Tom's Day Tie. It doesn't, there's nothing in that race you can say, oh, he's definitely going to beat them. But as far as what a bettor's mentality is going to be, when you have a situation where a horse gets everything right, and have everything go in their hands and it amplifies his performance, those are the races that you bet against the horse on, you know, and that's why, you know, Duke feels that way and he, as he should. But, you know, one of the problems with all these slow paced races that we've seen a lot of them at Saratoga, is that when they come back, you don't know, you know, the idea is you bet against a horse like that, but it doesn't mean they ran badly. You know, the odds will be lower than probably what he should be. So the idea is to bet against them, but it's not like a definitive, well, that horse is no good, he can't win. And that's the real bad thing about all these slow paced races. And, you know, it's just another one in the whole mix.
You've also,
I'm not saying, I'm not saying he's no good. I'm just saying that he's just, it's just worth it to bet against him. That's all. I just think it's he's going to come back a short price again. And I just think it's worth it. It's worth the chance. I'm not saying he's no good. I just think he might not be where he used to be.
2 weeks out, 2 weeks from right now, Seth and I will be recapping the Derby. Quick Oaks and Derby thoughts, 2 weeks out to both. Duke, start us.
First of all, I'm disappointed because I'm supposed to go. And I thought everybody was saying, why are you going? Why are you going? You know, it's going to be horrible. I go, it's going to be horrible. There's only going to be 20,000 people there. There's usually 150,000. I said, this is going to be the greatest Derby I've ever gone to in my life. I'm going to actually be able to see the races during the day.
Enjoy it.
I thought it was going to be fabulous. But I'm disappointed in the female fan, but I guess they got to do what they got to do. As races go, I'm not sure who's even in the Oaks, but as the Derby goes, I think Tis the Law is just an absolute, I mean, just killer. I don't think there's anything even near him. Paul doesn't think he's necessarily as good as I do, but just watching him visually and watching what he's done and how he's done it, it's just, he gets better every race, I think. And it's just, I just think it's lights out.
Nice. Who's your price key?
I have no idea.
No idea yet. All right, Paul.
Well, the only thing that I would say is that I have the figures on Tis the Law is obviously a great, you know, a very good horse, and he's possibly a great horse. He reminds me a little bit of Seattle Slough in the fact that he does everything that he's asked of, and he does it easy, but he hasn't run real fast yet, and he hasn't overcome any problems yet. So I'm a little, you know, because of that and the fact that I have Art Collector and some of the other horses closer to him in figures than some other publications, I don't think it's a total slam dunk, but I would like to see him at some point have some kind of challenge. I'm sure he will in the Derby. So we'll find out how, you know, if he is a really great horse or not. But I just think it may be a hair too early to say what Duke was saying. So I'm a little bit more reserved as far as betting it. I had an idea for a different horse that I did like, but it's escaping me. As far as the Oaks, I do have a better idea at that race. I think the 3-0 fillies are really good, you know, and everybody's talking about the big two and Gamine and Swiss Skydriver, but you know, I think
Speech.
Don't forget about Speech. I think she's a very good filly and has run really fast. She's going to be competitive with the other two, and if the way the other two run, I think Speech may be a really good play in the Kentucky Oaks.
We'll get back to you certainly when it comes to get to both of you when it comes to Oaks Derby. We'll get to you on the radio. Let's do one of our great traditions, Seth. Yeah, we got to get the Paul and Duke Loose on the Lead visit winners. You've been doing it for years with us, so here's your opportunity, Paul. Today,
I know you really, but this card, you're really putting my streak in jeopardy here. I've been proud of the streak. Every horse I've given out.
I think you said that last year, though.
And I don't know about that today. This is a tough card. Oh, you know, the other thing I wanted to say too is, you know, your following of the show is so deep that every Christmas time I get text because if you don't know, the OTB channel runs the
week. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I get more texts on Christmas Eve and Christmas that you're on TV right now. I'm looking to be on TV. So Merry Christmas.
That's great.
That's
very good.
Tremendous.
I like a horse in the fourth race, Pulse Alarm.
Yep.
That's the horse I like the best. The problem with Pulse Alarm is that the big favorite in the race, No Salt, I don't dislike. So you got to save with the 2-7 exacta. But I think Pulse Alarm is going to run real good in that race. It's a very bad maiden turf race. And Pulse Alarm got his head ripped off and got a terrible trip, and his race 2 ago is arguably the best race that any of the horses in the race have run. And I love his workout in his last race. It's an old
the mile
contested type move, You know, she's the trainer, the current trainer. She's the former assistant for Contessa. And she 2 minute licked the mile, but it really was, it's better than a 2 minute lick. It was 1:46. So I'm expecting that that horse to run real well today in the fourth.
I agree. Anything else?
Yeah, in the sixth race, I do like Mia Be a Star, the Donk horse. I don't like that one as much. He's got, it's an uncoupled entry where his other half is going to be the favorite. So I like the longer half of the uncoupled, which has kind of been that's happened a lot at Saratoga this year.
The other Donk.
I'm not great on these uncoupled entries. That's why, but I do like the six in that race too.
And what are you doing in the Diana?
Well, I think I'm coming back to the one. Call me love.
Mm-hmm.
Come on. I think she can reverse on Starship Jubilee, and I like the way the race is going to go for it. I think that they got to be aggressive with Rushing Fall. They can't let the motion horse on the outside get an easy lead. She ought to fall in right perfect on that inner turf, where the inner turf this week has been inside.
Yep.
So it's more of a trip angle. Plus, she's trained well since the race, and nobody's been hotter than Clamott. So that's more of a kind of turf trip play than anything. And she's going to get lost in the wagering because of
yes. Yes.
You know, the other horses are going to take money.
I agree. I agree too. Nicely done, Duke. What are you doing today?
Well, it's funny about that. Paul said mentioned that Christmas thing because last year, like on, I think you guys show it on Christmas Eve. I just get this text from this 518 number, and it's like, "Hey, I can see you on TV." And I'm like, "What the heck is he talking about? See me on TV?" And I'm like, "How could I possibly be on TV? I'm sitting at home, you know, Christmas Eve." And like, what is he even talking about? But then Paul told me that they run the show like on Christmas Eve and Christmas. It's like, that's just the weirdest thing to get these texts that you're on TV. Like,
you guys are the gifts that keep on giving.
Today's card, I got a couple ideas. Third race at Saratoga, the two, I Ain't Afraid of No Ghost. He got, an interesting ride. He got left at the gate, and then the horse was getting out a little bit on the turn with Jose Ortiz that day, and comes back with a couple really good works. So I think 8-1 morning line, he's probably going to get bet a little bit more than that, but I think for his chances, I think Chad will always be over betting here, and the mod horse is working good. So I'll probably play with two in a 2-6 exacta box in that race.
Nice.
And then in the fifth race, I like a horse named Dances for Token.
That's who I picked. Yep.
Junior rode the horse like he's never been on horseback last time. So before that, we had the horse running a little bit better than it looks. So I think for 5-1, I think that horse has got a big shot in there.
Excellent. And Duke, I'll ask you for a stake pick. What about in the Del Mar Mile late tonight? I'm using it as the Beat Bick contest race, and I'm going back for Mo Forza. I think that Peter Miller will have Barry Abrams' wonderful horse from last year coming off the layoff. Pegasus, I guess you count that as this year, but essentially it's his first start as an older horse. Mo Forza for me in the mile. You got a thought for us there?
I have to root for Barry. You know, Barry trained for me for over 10 years, 15 years. He got my first winner in California. I had a lot of success, and Barry's had a rough go with, with the throat cancer and everything. He's still see some trooper. I see him every time I go to Santa Anita, and every time I see him, he talks about Mo Forza. He almost cries when that horse wins.
Yep.
He's so excited for that horse to, just keep on going. So I have to root for him there. I haven't really looked at the race that closely, but I mean, if he comes back the way he was running last year, he's got to have a big shot in there. I mean, because he's a tremendously game horse, and he can go to the lead. He can come from behind. He's got just He's just tremendous.
Last year when he won the race at might have been what, the Twilight Derby or whatever it was when we were at Santa Anita. I think it was the Twilight Derby. And Barry showed me his texts to Ron Anderson before the horse ever ran. Yeah, because because of course Barry is very closely associated with Joel Rosario's career, and gave gave Joel a big part of his start.
Barry's one of the nicest guys I've ever met,
and smartest.
He's tremendous, and he's been telling me about that horse before, even when it was a baby. He was telling me about that horse. I mean, it's just that's just the way he is. Barry's got these like instincts and they somehow come true with these horses. He's the story of Unusual Heat is amazing, if he tells you that. The story of Guts is amazing. He showed me tapes of Guts. It was a harness horse back in, I don't know, was it the 70s, I think. It's just, Barry's always been around some of these great horses, and he's got a lot of positive thoughts, Barry, for a guy that's had a lot of things go wrong for him.
Well, a guy that literally, with his family, walked out of Soviet Russia to make a life for themselves in North America, and what he's done for so many people. Ask Anthony Quartarolo what Barry did for him. And the guy is a gem. And, you know, it's sad. Duke, you can appreciate this more than most. Of course, we lost Mel Studi a week ago, too, in that table at Clocker's Corner, where Mel and Gary Studi and Barry, where they all for years have held court, and it hasn't been the same in recent years as Mel became more infirmed, and of course Barry doesn't come out as often. You talk about that story with Unusual Heat, and Barry has a folder which has got everything, all the writing about the Hungarian dam and how the whole, I mean, the breeding and how he, you know, how he found Unusual Heat. It's an amazing, it is an amazing story, an amazing person. I'm with you, rooting hard for Mo Forza today.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him. Barry's a good guy. Mel Studi, I spent many time at Mel Studi Bar, I think, at Hollywood Park too.
Yeah,
there's a bar there. Right?
Absolutely.
Named after him. So, I missed Mel, you know, because he was. He used to run all his horses at Fairplex. I think he's still probably the leading trainer at Fairplex of all time. But he
with Pedroza,
I miss Fairplex, and his studios are great people. I was going to say
when I think of Mel Studi and Barry, I think of Fairplex. They used to hold Fairplex. Duke and I used to go to the Fairplex every day out, and those two guys are true racing characters. Yeah.
We're running late. We got to wrap it up. But before we do wrap it up, I wanted to ask both of you guys, have you qualified yet for Vegas?
I haven't even tried.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I haven't tried yet either. It's been an odd year. And I'm not sure what's going to happen with the NHC this year. And there's a lot of things still on the table. And so I've kind of been waiting to see what finally gets announced before I decide to. So,
right,
I don't know, the NHC is probably another thing that might get, you know, it's been attacked by all that's going on in the world.
So. Yeah, you would think it's going to have to modify in some or get pushed or something.
Well, and based on what's going on in Vegas as well, Duke, have you been over? Have you been over to Vegas in the last few months?
I have not, but my son has. He goes back and forth from the Vegas to here, and he says it's definitely less people around, but it's I don't know. I mean, Vegas is probably better than most places. I think they're at least trying to get normal, somewhat normal. The casinos are, even though you got to wear masks and all that stuff. But I don't know about the NHC this year. I just don't know. I haven't really. I think I've played one tournament. And, you know, didn't fare.
Wow.
I was up there for a while. Didn't fare too well at the end. I just don't have time for online tournaments. I'd rather much go in person and be at the track and play a tournament than
understand
and sit in my office and play a tournament. I'd just rather bet the races. So I'll get there maybe eventually in the late fall when things die down at these big tracks.
Well, have you qualified for the Beat Bick for my contest? You could win a free seat.
All right. How do I do that?
You got to go to ntra.com/beatbic. You make a pick either with me. I picked Mo Forza, so this might not be a good week. But you pick either with me or against me. If I win and you're with me, you qualify for the final. We're going to have the final in second week in September, and then it's an open contest, probably 8 or 10 races, and somebody's going to Vegas. So
sounds good.
Take a shot.
If you get close to winning, Steve will throw it for you. That'll be the biggest scandal in racing. Duke beats Dick. It'll be an investigation.
Guys, so much fun. We miss not having you, you know, sitting right here with us.
Yeah, hopefully next laughing year along back and, in here.
But very happy. Very happy for you.
This is all I got is my shirt. That's all I got. I can't get to Saratoga and just wear the shirt over here.
Again, we appreciate the visit. Congratulations on the nice win. We'll be watching for stimulus check down the road. But again, really appreciate the visit. And hey, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Paul and Duke Matisse, always fun to have them in here. And again, hopefully the streak continues with some winners this afternoon. As every year when they come in, they toss out a few light candies. So we'll see what happens today.
Always.
All right, we're late, so we got to wrap it up. Anything else you want to hit on?
I want to hit on one thing. You're going to see later today, probably a TDN, and then tomorrow, Jerry Brown is one of the people that is going to testify at the Joint Committee on Licensing Occupations, etc. This is regarding the USADA bill that the Jockey Club has thrown its weight behind. I urge you, when you get a chance to see it later tonight, particularly at TDN, I really urge you to read it. Jerry has been speaking on behalf of horse players against the USADA bill. And whether you've seen his op-eds and you've seen his letters to the editor and so forth, also at his website at Thorograph.com, Jerry speaking for all of us, trying to stop this thing from interceding. And it's something that horse players will be forced to pay for. They'll end up adding takeout to make us pay for USADA's oversight. And there's nothing in the USADA bill that is going to, you know, solve any problems in racing when it comes to testing and when it comes to monitoring, you know, racehorses and horsemen. It's not a benefit to anybody. The Jockey Club wants to pretend it is. Make sure you read Jerry's testimony when you get a chance the next couple of days.
All right, we'll wrap it up because the NYRA pregame should be just about to launch. So Seth Merrill, Steve Bick, on Sunday. We will talk to you live from Louisville next Sunday morning.
Thanks, everybody. Good luck today, and we'll talk to you from the Ville.
Same.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by